From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The sun has risen on an independent United Kingdom. And just look at it. Even the weather's improved.
That was Nigel Farage, the leader of the United Kingdom's Independence Party, or UKIP, as he called for June 23rd to go down in history as Britain's Independence Day.
It's been a hell of a long journey, this. I first got involved in Eurosceptic politics 25 years ago, and the first election I contested, I managed to beat the late, great, screaming Lord Such by 164 votes, so I didn't come last. And now there are 17 million people that voted for Brexit.
He called Thursday's referendum vote to leave the EU a victory for ordinary, decent people and a victory against the big merchant banks.
It's a victory for ordinary people, decent people. It's a victory against the big merchant banks, against the big businesses and against big politics. And I'm proud of everybody that had the courage, in the face of all the threats, everything they were told, they had the guts to stand up and do the right thing.
The Brits voted to leave the EU with the so-called Brexit winning a majority in Thursday's referendum. CCTV's Li Danying has more.
The BBC has declared victory for the Leave camp in the UK's referendum on the country's 43-year EU membership, with 52% of voters backing a so-called Brexit. Over 17 million votes are for Leave, as against the nearly 16 million for Remain. The majority of voters in England and Wales voted to Leave, while every council in Scotland saw Remain majorities. And there was a high turnout for Thursday's historic referendum, standing at 72%. The European Parliament President Martin Schulz has reacted to the news, saying he expects negotiations over Britain's departure from the EU to begin quickly.
Donald Tusk, the European Council President, said that the other 27 members of the current 28-member EU were determined to keep their unity as 27 during a press statement at Council headquarters in Brussels early Thursday.
Today, on behalf of the 27 leaders, I can say that we are determined to keep our unity as 27. For all of us, the Union is the framework for our common future. I would also like to reassure you that there will be no legal vacuum until the United Kingdom formally leaves the European Union. EU law will continue to apply to and within the UK. And by this I mean rights as well as obligations. All the procedures for the withdrawal of the UK from the EU are clear and set out in the treaties. In order to discuss the details of further proceedings, I have offered the leaders an informal meeting of the 27 in the margins of the European Council summit. And I will also propose to the leaders that we start a wider reflection on the future of our union.
Meanwhile, across the world, relations between Russia and China appear to be their warmest in decades, as China's President Xi Jinping met with Russia's President Vladimir Putin Thursday, ahead of the annual summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Uzbekistan. Xi said Putin's upcoming state visit to China bears special significance after Putin's call earlier this week for closer coordination in major international and regional affairs between the two countries. CCTV's Daria Bodarchuk reports from Moscow.
A strategic collaboration. That's how the Kremlin's described its relationship with China, as Vladimir Putin heads to Beijing for talks with President Xi. The Russian leader says their strong ties contribute to the stability of world affairs. But as well as geopolitics, over 30 economic agreements are on the agenda, both governmental and corporate, focusing on financial, industrial and agricultural cooperation. But it's not just business. President Xi Jinping and President Vladimir Putin will also discuss cooperation between Beijing and Moscow within the United Nations, BRICS and the G20 frameworks. Vladimir Putin will be hoping to return to the Kremlin with plenty of trade agreements between Beijing and Moscow. It is important economically, as Russia still faces Western sanctions, but also politically, as it sends a message to the Kremlin's opponents that Russia may not be as isolated internationally as some of them may like to think. Дарья Бондарчук, CCTV, Moscow.
The strains in the EU and the closer collaboration between Russia and China may explain these statements earlier this week by U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter.
In this new era, we face no fewer than five immediate, evolving challenges. First, countering the prospect of Russian aggression and coercion, especially in Europe. Second, managing historic change in the vital Asia-Pacific region, where China is rising, which is fine, but behaving aggressively, which is not.
After listing Russia and China as public enemies number one and two, Carter still had room for three more.
Strengthening our deterrent and defense forces in the face of North Korea's nuclear and missile provocations and threats to our allies. Checking Iranian aggression and malign influence in the Gulf. And we must and we are combating terrorism, including accelerating the defeat of ISIL. Last week's tragic shooting in Orlando underscores the urgency of that last one. And Orlando further steels our resolve to carry out all the aspects of our coalition military campaign plan. First, destroying ISIL's parent tumor in Iraq and Syria, which is necessary, not sufficient, because second, we need to combat ISIL's metastases worldwide, wherever it appears, and third, help protect the homeland and our people. Now, we don't have the luxury of choosing among these five different challenges. We must and will address them all across the spectrum of conflict.
I was sent that clip on Wednesday by Umberto Pascali, the commentator and political analyst. Umberto, you want to break that down for us? It sounds like he's ready to go to war with the world.
Yeah. And the most astonishing thing, by the way, this was the speech on the 20th in Washington, D.C., in front of 1,000 national security officials, basically the whole creme de la creme of the Pentagon, neocon side. And at the national conference of the Center for New American Security, that is the center of the neocon now, and the conference was dedicated of how to shape the new administration, what the new administration should do. Of course, clearly, openly, they are supporting Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's like a tag team with the campaign with this.
Absolutely. That's the campaign of Hillary Clinton. There are all the people that, by the way, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have been attacking. They are all there. With the crystal, with the Robert Kagan that prepared the program that now Ashton Carter is reading. The program was prepared by Kagan. Kagan is the husband of Victoria Nuland, the movie director of the coup d'etat in Kiev.
And the cookie server.
Yeah, and the one who was trying to corrupt the police with their cookies, and she is the girl of Hillary, in the sense that there are rumors in Washington, I hope it's not true, that if Hillary is elected, Victoria Nuland, wife of Robert Kagan, neocon and inspirer of Ashton Carter, is Victoria Nuland will be the next Secretary of State. Hope not, because we'll be sure war. Anyway, now Ashton Carter talking to this exactly the bipartisan neocon gang that is now behind Hillary Clinton says that there are five immediate challenges. The first challenge is European aggression, especially against Europe. This is a quote. European aggression, especially against Europe. The last threat is ISIL, ISIS, Daesh, and so on. So this shows the priority of the defense secretary. But what is more important, what you were asking, is why do we have ISIS at all? Fortunately, it has been limited by the airstrikes and by the policy of the Russians in Syria, because for the administration of Barack Obama, they were not going to be defeated. They were going to be contained. If you remember, that was what Obama officially said more than once. We are not going to solve this problem militarily, group of terrorists. But we are going to solve it politically. We have to contain them. Contain means only one thing: to use them.
Right.
Beside the fact that if you go to see the origin of ISIS, you find the fingerprint of special agencies, Anglo-American agencies, Anglo-American Israeli agency all over the place, obviously. But officially, the position is we are not going to destroy them, to contain them. Contain means when we need them, I don't know, in Iraq we need them, we use them. In Syria we use them. Then maybe we split them and one part will be the good terrorist and the other will be the bad terrorist.
Right.
And this is the priorities of the supposed new administration if Hillary Clinton is selected. The second priority, by the way, is China.
Yeah.
China is growing, says Carter. And this is good, but it's aggressive. And this is bad, and we are going to stop it. Then North Korea. Okay. But then the malevolent, malign influence of Iran.
Yeah.
This is much more important challenge for the United States than ISIS.
Yeah.
Because ISIS, it's only the last point. This clarifies a lot of things. First of all, why we had this electoral campaign in this strange way. We had a basic rebellion in the United States against this policy of the neocons. Actually, people think neocons is a group of Republicans that are hiding somewhere and do some little thing. No. These are the people that dominate the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, all the administration, the war administration, all the administrations that put together the interest of Wall Street against the American population and the need of a war all over the place. And Ashton Carter says these five priorities, not that we can take one after the other, all together. And thus we need a lot of money, a lot of big budget for our military operations all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key points, by the way, is the weakness of Europe that could hear, the allure of the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to reinforce the resolve of the Europeans.
Yeah.
And, we saw in recently the case of the foreign minister of Germany.
Steinmeier, yeah.
Steinmeier, yeah, Franz Walter Steinmeier, who explicitly, on the day in which a big maneuver, this Anaconda military maneuver, for the first time since World War II, the German troops entered Poland, cross the borders.
Mm-hmm.
This time they are good because they are under the NATO umbrella, under the NATO flag.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody in Wall Street and among the neocon is supporting Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Russia made clear they are not going to give up. They tried with Gorbachev, they tried with Yeltsin, and they arrived almost to a dismemberment of their country. You know, a situation like with Napoleon or with Hitler. They are not going to accept anymore to be put in that role. They are going to fight, and they made this very, very clear.
Yeah. It's funny how it's playing out here also. You've got on the one side the entire political establishment and Hillary Clinton, and Sanders deviated some from that, but not as much as Trump, who calls into question the need for NATO, certainly calls for funding of NATO by European countries, which of course is politically impossible there. Just looking at France today, try telling them they have to pay 2% of their budget for that.
Mm-hmm.
And also the very idea of permanent war, which you're hearing is our policy yesterday at this conference, as absurd, and he invoked General Patton and General MacArthur and asked, what would they think of the idea of permanent warfare? So when you have this political situation shaping up in the United States, you have the troops mobilized. I mean, the places you described, the five places that he described, Carter, you're talking about basically from the Baltics to the Korean Peninsula, which coincidentally or not happens to encircle Russia and China.
Right. You are exactly right. And the problem is what they are facing. I think there is... First, let me stress that what the foreign minister of Germany said is that NATO is becoming a warmonger. We don't need this kind of warmonger statement against Russia. We have to find a solution on Russia. And, by the way, today, the foreign minister of Germany, Gabriel, another member of the Social Democratic Party, like Steinmeier, announced that he's going to Moscow for a very important economic mission. We can talk about this later. But, what I see now in the U.S., because of this resistance of Russia and clear resistance, because a few days ago, on the 16th, on the skies of Syria, we had almost for the first time a direct military confrontation between the U.S. and Russia. This never happened during the Cold War, but happened a few days ago on the skies of Syria, near the border of Jordan, where a terrorist center, was attacked by Russian military plane. And then we had the intervention of the U.S. Air Forces, and there was really a very, very close encounter, confrontation. So the Russian left, but then shortly after, they come back and they destroy the terrorist center. Mm. Of course, there were screams all over the place, but nobody dare really to do anything like attacking directly the Russian forces. But this is the situation which we are. We are more close to a real war because of the neocons, a real war like nuclear war, than we ever been, not even the Cuban missile crisis. That's why I think in the U.S. there are two ways of thinking. And I would distinguish, this is my hypothesis, between the elite or part of the elite in the United States and the establishment. We had an establishment, the establishment of Bush, Clinton. These are not two different groups, one left, one right, Democratic, Republican. It's exactly the same from the very beginning. There is the crime family of the Bush, like, I don't know, the Gambino. And then there is the sub-family, the Clinton, the nouveau riche, that are accepted and that they have to do a lot of the dirty work
right.
And they have to get rich fast because they start from scratch. Mm. That's why Hillary Clinton is so mad to make as much money as possible. It's a tragic, ridiculous figure. Mm. This establishment has been in power basically since the assassination of the Kennedys. Right. I mean, slowly, the Bush acquired their prominent position as the royal family of the United States after the assassination of John Kennedy and in 68 Robert Kennedy, they begin to emerge. There are all the stories, I'm sure you have gone through in your previous transmission, of the role of the young George Bush father in Miami with the Cuban that were involved in the assassination. But this will be for another time.
Yeah, and you know what? There's something I want to point out, by the way, before we get too far from Steinmeier. This is the same German foreign minister who, while he was negotiating the deal that was supposed to be the final deal with President Yanukovych, Vicky Nuland was saying he's the guy that she was talking about, in essence, when she said, you know what, the EU, because he ended up as the guarantor of a peace process in Ukraine that was the next day violated with a coup.
Right, right. The FU, the EU, by, I don't know, we cannot say this, what the Victoria Nuland said, right. But the FU, the EU, was directed to Germany and then France and Italy, because they, of course, they understood, the most rational part, understood perfectly that the coup d'etat in Kiev and the kind of confrontation that was being prepared against Russia was also against them.
Right.
Because, you know, as Putin repeated the other day in St. Petersburg, the U.S., with the sanction against Russia, don't lose anything. The European lose a lot, more than Russia.
Yep.
So this was the same reason why NATO exists now, when it's absolutely doesn't make any sense, when there is no Warsaw Pact, there is no enemy. NATO is as strong as ever. The first secretary of NATO said, when he was asked, why do we have a NATO? Well, to keep the Russian out, the American in, and the Germans down. Now, the new version is to keep the Europeans down. Now, Steinmeier at that time had to give up. You know, was shameful, was coward, and the same Italy, you know. They had to give up also other pressure, like Italy had this deal with oil, basically was very cheap source of energy from Libya, and Italy, there was a deal between Prime Minister Berlusconi and President Gheddafi, and then Italy was forced to go to war. Didn't really go to war, but was forced officially to go to war with Libya. And so this is the situation, that Europe has been in a cage with this continuous provocation, using mostly Ukraine as the casus belli, in which Europe and Russia have to fight forever.
And they're fighting back, because not just Steinmeier, but also the Italian prime minister was in St. Petersburg for the International Economic Conference, which is where Steinmeier made the comments.
Exactly. Well, Steinmeier did the comment a few days before that meeting. But, you know, stop the warmongers. We don't need the warmongers of NATO. And then in St. Petersburg, as the economic forum of St. Petersburg, Matteo Renzi, the prime minister of Italy, said, we are sick and tired of this automatic renegotiation of the sanctions. We don't need the sanctions, we don't like the sanctions, and we have to find a way out. In the meantime, the way out is economic deals. Despite all the sanctions and so on, Renzi concluded in Moscow contracts between the Italian industry and the Russian industry for $1.5 billion. And a couple of months before, the prime minister of Bavaria. Bavaria is the richest area of Germany. It's also the most industrialized. It's basically state within the state. The prime minister of Bavaria, Horst Seehofer, went to Moscow despite the Chancellor Angela Merkel said, don't go, this is against our line. He went there, he concluded a deal for more than 600 million euros in contract. Now, Gabriel is the leader of the Social Democratic Party, and he announced that he's going to Moscow in behalf of the German industry and will conclude a huge contract there. So this is the form of rebellion. The form that this European rebellion takes is, for the moment, an economic form, because in the meantime, the sanctions were renewed. But it's not so simple. It's not the sanctions are renewed, but they are being emptied. They are like, they become an empty shell, because the two parts of Eurasia, they work together economically.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things is when we've discussed before the that a lot of this goes back to the 1980s and the struggle between industrial and financial capital inside Germany, with industrial capital looking to the east and financial capital taking its instructions from its bed partner in the west.
Right, you are absolutely right. This is the key. When someone look at Germany, see a country that is betraying their own interest. Angela Merkel doesn't work for Germany. That's what people don't understand. You know, the dictatorship of Germany. No, the dictatorship of Angela Merkel is the dictatorship in behalf of Wall Street. The Germany had a complete different policy. Until the beginning of the 90s, the policy had been created by a gentleman called Alfred Herrhausen. He had a powerful position. He was the top advisor on economy of Chancellor Kohl, Helmut Kohl. He was the head of the Deutsche Bank, this huge bank, the biggest, most powerful in Europe, one of the biggest in the world. And his policy was, we are not going to do what the Wall Street Bank do. Our interest is not to destroy our client because they cannot pay interest on the debt. In case we can forgive the debt, because we are in the business of investing in development, in industry, and when this investment begin to give fruits, then we have our profit. This will be long-term investments. He was killed. In November 1989, Alfred Herrhausen, the most powerful man in Europe, I would say, was killed by the terrorist of the so-called Bader-Meinhof near Bonn, Baden-Gottesberg, while the Bader-Meinhof did not exist anymore. They were all in jail. He was going to New York to give a speech in front of the IMF World Bank crowd. The speech was never delivered because he was killed. But, you know, I remember Colonel Fletcher Prouty, I had an interview with him at that time, a few years later. He gave me the speech that he was supposed to give in front of this, basically, the Wall Street bosses. And the speech was basically, thank you for what you have done for us, but now we will do it by ourselves. Mm. We are perfectly able to have an independent, economically and politically independent Europe doing business with the East. After he was killed, of course, the fear hit the sky. And Germany is in the situation which is now. But the alternative now is economic suicide. If they keep obeying to the order of Wall Street and the neocon, it's economic suicide in Germany, in Italy, in France.
And on that note, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.